Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Johnny Manson here, and we have two guests this morning. We have Mr. Doug Hychek, who's a successful TV documentarian. I think that's the right term, right? Documentarian?
Pretty good.
Okay. Series producer, television show creator, and we have back Mr. David Ellis of the Olympic Project. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having us on, Johnny. This is great.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny.
Mr. Hychek, you are the president and founder of White Wolf Entertainment, Inc., a television production company specializing in nonfiction programming. Could you tell us a little more about that and what you do? And I know you do a lot of things, so I think we might barely have enough time to cover that.
Well, White Wolf was founded way back in the 80s and started out doing a just a kind of an outdoor show. Back, I think it was 1985, and that show is still on the air, Johnny.
Oh, wow.
So my first show is still going. Second generation host now, because Ron retired and his daughter took over. So it's really cool. But we've just done a lot of outdoor programming, science programming, cryptid programming, which is what people know me for, but I've done shows on everything from babies to race cars.
Wow.
So, people don't know that.
Now, in our topics, you've done Comedians Looking for Bigfoot. Like, you were the producer of the Sizzle Reel.
Yeah,
the Sizzle Reel for Missing 411 with David Pilates, I think. And their Legend Meets Science is another kind of well-known show there. How was the experiences with the Sasquatch and the Missing 411 stuff?
Well, yeah, me and David were working on a show pitch, and I did the kind of a, what they call a sizzle reel with David to pitch the networks, and we ended up getting a development deal, but people weren't really too happy with the deal, and so in fact, me and David recently talked about trying to launch a series. But yeah, it's just been, just such a mixed bag of TV and doing stuff. But I always tell people the reason I do TV is so I can learn. I always considered myself, you know, a wildlife researcher. So I would do wildlife shows, which would give me the funding to do crazy stuff, you know, in the outdoors. And that's kind of the spirit of White Wolf. You know, it's more towards getting answers and producing TV, as bad as that sounds.
And you hooked up with Les Stroud, Survivor Man, to help out with Survivor Man Bigfoot, right?
Yeah. I've done a lot of consulting and things, and I was the tech director, but in a truer sense, just somebody who gave moral support to Les and helped him with some technology.
What is your opinion of the whole Sasquatch phenomenon? Like, do you think it's a real entity? Do you think it's misidentification? What do you think it is?
Let's put it this way, Johnny. There is literally a mountain of, like, Mount Everest size of anecdotal evidence, including what I consider hard evidence, that they absolutely exist, and then pile on the probably more than 500 people a day that get a glimpse, you know, a road crossing, a glimpse out of the, you know, walking along the ditch and on the road where they see it for 4 seconds. Those things are never going to go away. And so it literally has to be real, just based on the mountain of evidence from footprints, hair, SCAT. We have a body cast. We have amazing film shot in 1967. There's just no way. Of course, I have found my own footprints. I've had my own experiences. You know, when things throw rocks at you when you're up in the Arctic, and there's nobody around for 500 square miles, it isn't a polar bear.
Right.
I got news. It's something. It's got fingers and hands and arms.
Can you talk more about your experiences, or would you prefer not to?
Oh, well, it's just so many of them. I wouldn't even know where to start, but I had my first experience, actually, and didn't really even connect the dots with a Bigfoot. But I was deer hunting when I was just, maybe an old teenager. And I was with my uncle and my cousins and my best friend. We were stationed a quarter mile apart on deer stands. And all of a sudden, I hear chest beating that sounded like a gorilla. I knew grouse, because I had already been a grouse hunter. I knew what they sounded like. This was loud. You could feel it vibrate in your body, chest beating. And then I got hit with the stench. And it was so bad, I had to cover my face. And what was the most interesting is that when I went back to camp at noon, every single person had the same exact experience different times of the day, where they were either being intimidated, from their stand. So it went from person to person to person to let them know this was their area. So that was my first. And then you just kind of put it in the back burner. And then I was up literally in the Arctic, up on the Arctic Circle, up on a lake called Selwyn. And I was up there trying to film a cryptid lake trout, which was a lake trout over 6 feet long, because numerous people had seen one. I had seen one. People had been, telling stories to me of them being dragged around in their boat for 6 hours, up a river. And so I went up there, with a whole bunch of new, cameras in lures and all sorts of equipment to try to get film. Excuse me. And we literally had to take a potty break on shore. And there were footprints coming out of the water on, just crisp footprints in the kind of the damp sand, very much fine like beach sand, up into the pea gravel where they were very deep in the pea gravel where we couldn't even dent it, into the moss, and then there was a footprint in front of a tree trunk, and then one directly behind it, behind the tree trunk. And that was a life-changing moment for me. And at that point, I switched literally most of my energy to the Bigfoot mystery.
Wow.
Doug, didn't you track that track line for
over
a mile?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we actually went beyond the trees against our better judgment. There were people that we were with that said, we need to go back. Because whatever this was, they did not want to meet up with it. And the tracks were pretty fresh. And so we went beyond that little stand of 7 foot trees, and there off in the horizon, you could see the footprints in a straight line going off into the horizon. And so, and of course I remember going back with Rick, and we tried to get the float plane pilots. We took a 20 mile trip back to the main base camp and tried to convince this guy to go get the float plane up. Because I had a broadcast quality camera, with a zoom lens. You go up, there's no tree cover up there. We could have followed without any doubt in my mind whatever was making those tracks. And I could have got, footage. Float planes can go really slow. We could have, just glided over it over and over and over. And I could have got a ton of footage. And so he thought we were playing a hoax on him. And he got really, really angry. I mean, I remember he threw his clipboard. So we kind of, slinked out of there. I regret not approaching him again and trying to convince him that, we weren't joking.
In your opinion, why haven't we discovered Sasquatch?
Well, we have discovered him. It just hasn't been officially recognized by science. Although I really think we're close. Here's why. Through DNA, the technology has gotten almost 10 times better per year, right? So you can take anything that's been done in the past and throw it away. Don't even look at it. Don't even think about it. It literally, DNA technology didn't even exist barely back then. So now we've got enough samples, and literally me alone has enough samples to get a baseline on these things. So I think very soon, before the end of next year, we will have baseline on the entire genome of a Bigfoot.
Without naming names, I think you can go a little bit more into detail with the crew that you're putting together. You've got some top-notch scientists in your bag of tricks.
Yeah, for instance, I was just going to mention, for instance, we have the North Carolina University, the DNA labs there, with some of the top DNA scientists literally right there. We've got other people that I'm working with in genetics that mainly focus on crime, but they do entire sequencing. They use artificial intelligence. They have huge databases, including on early man.
Doug, this is really breakthrough stuff that you're talking about here, because people don't really understand that most DNA labs will not take this request up. And it's only because of the people that you're working with do have a skeptical interest, which is what you want. You don't want somebody that's biased, but they're not afraid of what the result might yield.
Yep. So thanks to my own connections that I've made in the last 2 years, but then people like Amy Boo, who have recruited a ton of scientists to start communicating with each other. Giving them really no excuse not to do it, because they can retain their anonymous stature, and so it's not going to affect their job. And then you have people like Darby Orcutt, who is a research coordinator who knows tons of academics and has done this kind of big program coordination. And so it's those types of situations that we're in, and now we have the technology. I mean, DNA, by next year, DNA will be 10 times better than it is today. That's where I think this will absolutely be solved. I'm sitting on probably, let's just say today we got another 300 samples, just today.
You want to segue into Alba Vernix?
Alba Vernix is a name, as kind of a moniker, a scientific moniker that Shelley Covington, Montana, came up with because it was weird timing. I had announced on my Facebook page that I thought that these white, what everybody thought were dusty fingerprints happening all over the country for years and years and years. There's tons of photos even on the internet of kind of a white, big, giant fingerprints on windows, car doors, car windows, camper windows, house windows, patio windows. And for years, everybody just thought, oh, it left dusty fingerprints. So you can't get DNA out of dust, and nobody really thought anything about it, and one day it hit me. And I posted on my Facebook page that this is a waxy skin oil, or as Darby calls it, SSL, surface skin lipids, which is, sebum, so it's skin oil. But they seem to have a very waxy, thick coating. I'll get a little bit more into this, but just so happens when I posted that, it was Shelley and Michael Waldy had a case they were working, because one of these things had pressed its face against a window, and of course it left this thick white skin oil all over the window, perfect face print. And so the timing was perfect of my announcement. And then suddenly this appears to them, and they're both citizen scientists. And so the dots connected for them too, and they went, and literally they got the entire door donated to them with this big face print, photographed it, took DNA samples, because it should contain a ton of skin cells and should be very preserved in this skin oil. And you get the latent details, so you get the photo of the actual fingerprints, or in this case, a face print with, pores, and you can see the hair on the face, and nostrils, bone structure, and Then you take a swab of the actual compound itself, Johnny. So now you can analyze that. Like Darby gave me a chart, because I had read scientific papers that they had done orangutans, they had done gorillas, analyzed their skin oil and compared to humans. Like humans, we have a lot of triglycerides in our skin oil. Gorillas don't. We have cholesterol in our skin oil. Gorillas and orangutans and chimps don't. If we can collect and analyze, what are all the wax compounds? Is there squalene? Because squalene is in us hairless humans because that helps protect us from UV light. They don't have squalene in their skin oil, even though it might, it's similar in, wax compounds. There's a whole bunch of chemical differences. So it really becomes 3D evidence. DNA, molecular compounds, and the latent details, which contains, because the albivernix is so thick, it leaves a detailed print that you can literally see the skin pores or the sweat pores in the skin. And so it's just, it's an untapped resource all of us have been looking at for 30, 40 years, and we just ignored it.
This is just one small portion of your new documentary that you're putting together,
yep.
Legend Meets Science 2.
Yes.
A lot of people may associate the name Legend Meets Science with Dr. Meldrum's book, but he actually borrowed that title from you, if I'm...
Yeah, right. He based the book on my documentary. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Jeff, of course, will come out with Legend Meets Science 2 book.
Right.
Which I'm more excited about that than anything. let's put it this way. When I confronted Jeff, I said, Jeff, you're going to write the book, right? Then Legend Meets Science 2, and he goes, well, I've already talked to my wife about it. So I'm excited. I'm sure he will, barring any unforeseen circumstances. But, I'm real excited about all of the things that can be covered that we've just ignored. I'm going to be presenting 20 new pieces of evidence in very great detail. And actually, in some ways, I say great detail, but actually, in some ways, it'll be the opposite. What I'm going to do is present it all in light bulb format. So everything we present, the light bulb will go off in both scientists and just, people who just watch it, who don't even have an interest in the mystery. And so I'm really hoping to get their light bulb off, which, really, like what you do, David, with your sound analysis.
Yes.
When it was finally, when you guys finally got my light bulb to go off, which literally was probably in the 10th conversation.
Right.
Correct? I mean, it didn't happen instantly.
No, it didn't.
I don't think you guys really ever thought about the light bulb thing about your research that you guys did, but from my standpoint, I know exactly what got it off, and I know exactly how to communicate that to the world. So their light bulb goes off, which is basically, and David can explain it better than me, it's this tonal area that is completely missing in the Sasquatch vocals. And so the math doesn't add, well, the math adds up, but the math adds up different for Bigfoot vocals as it does humans. Correct, David?
Right. Yeah. It becomes a lot more clear rather than explaining it verbally. You have to associate it with a spectrogram. It's one of those, and that's the light bulb moment, Doug. That's when you went, oh my God, it is missing.
Yeah, it was the math. It was the lower tonal, where for humans you take this number on this bar, you add it to this number, and then that equals that number. And with Bigfoot, it's that one is missing completely. And when you guys said you hired voice actors and people try to mimic these things, and because they couldn't make that bar disappear, they couldn't make that set of frequencies completely just disappear.
Well, the voice actor sounded, he was attempting to mimic this particular suspect vocalization, which he did a very excellent job. I'm talking about all the harmonics actually lined up, but it was the missing, what's called the missing fundamental, which Monongahela has coined the term attenuated right. fundamental, which means it's missing. And so how could that possibly be? It just makes no sense.
Well, not only is it missing visually, David, it's mathematically missing.
Right, right.
That was my light bulb moment.
Yeah, that's how you prove that it's missing is through math.
Well, you prove it, but you look at it and you go, well, yeah, there's a difference here. But then when the actual numbers come out for these different fundamentals and how you add them together and then the way they're added together, and then to me that was like, oh my God, if we can just communicate this.
Exactly.
To people visually through animation, you know, and make that light bulb moment happen for other people, like it's happening to Johnny right now. I know it is.
Oh, I got my light bulb a long time ago.
Oh, goodness. So yeah, that was definitely one of the aha moments for myself and the Spectrum. There's other aha moments that we may be able to bring out as well, but that's the one. If there's just one thing that, like you say, if we can just have the light bulb go off on one thing, this is it. And so
it's a big deal. But then some of the other things we're gonna do with sound, we're gonna really demonstrate infrasound better than it's ever been demonstrated. We actually have a man who can produce infrasound with his voice. He can go lower than infrasound, actually half of what infrasound is. We're going to do some invasive camera work on his body, and we're going to film how he's making the infrasound. We're then going to get into Bigfoot anatomy and things that I'd learned from Jeff Meldrum. There's a whole bunch of tie-ins that are just going to shock people. They're going to go, yeah, I guess that is too big for a coincidence.
Right. All those people we made fun of, calling them whack jobs and tinfoil hat wearers, I'll have to stop doing that now.
Well, part and mixed in with this is the throat singing aspect of it.
Right.
How many witnesses have claimed that they've heard two different types of a high and a low component that were mixed together? Well, that's right. That's throat singing. Similar. I mean, in a nutshell. And so, you know, we'll investigate which came first, the chicken or the egg here. Who started throat singing? Them and we mimicked them, or they mimicked us? But yeah, throat singing.
That's actually my, you know, it's kind of a theory, obviously not even a theory, but it's kind of where I'm leaning. They must have had the Inuit and the peoples in the northern hemisphere, you know, Mongolia and all of these places that practice throat singing, must have been trying to mimic something they were hearing. I mean, you just don't make that up out of nowhere.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, more with our guests, wildlife TV producer, filmographer Doug Hychek, and Sasquatch audio specialist David Ellis of the Olympic Project.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We've been talking with Doug Hychek and David Ellis about Sasquatch. And where did we leave off? We talked about so much stuff.
Throat singing.
How does throat singing relate to Sasquatch?
When I had my first experience with a vocalization, I was around 11 years old. And I described the vocal to my parents as a cross between a lion roaring and an elephant trumpeting. Mm-hmm. I said that there was two components to this. It wasn't just one particular sound. And that's what kind of differentiated it for me from other animals in the woods. This was a very, very strange vocalization.
And you have to remember, even we as humans still have these vestibular sacs, air sacs left over near our throats. Gorillas have them. So I don't believe that this weird tonal quality is coming from just from their vocal cords. It's got to be coming from their entire windpipe. And of course, a tube, I always tell people a tube is the best way to make infrasound. You could do it with a garden hose. Just swing a garden hose around. You're creating infrasound. I remember it was actually Yvette, my girlfriend, who sent me a link of throat singing and said, have you ever thought that this is some connection? And I remember I sent that same clip to David. And I think you had already thought about this. But I think that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Kind of got you back into it again. So I can't take any credit for it. But what I do take credit for is just sending you that link again and getting you pumped up on it.
It brought back some thoughts for sure.
Right. And if we can, no one has ever put a camera to view what happens with a throat singer. And I want to do that and compare it then with this manna that I have, who is going to allow me to have a trained ENT put a very small camera, run it, snake it through his sinus cavity. I know David loves me when I talk about this. Snake it through his sinus cavity, which is quite painful because I had him do it to me. Without any anesthetic, so I could feel what it felt like. It's quite alien, quite horrible. And then down into your windpipe, into your throat. It's pretty weird. It's pretty weird. But we're going to, so for the first time, we're going to be able to visually see what is going on with throat singing. And then, you know, of course, combine that with David's work with spectrograms and math and all of the cool things. We're really hoping we can get some light bulbs going off.
You had asked if there was any new science, and I think we've kind of put a little bit of light bulb moment, as Doug would call it, into people's minds with what's coming with the Legend Meets Science. And Doug has a lot more in his quiver here, so yep. We're just kind of touching highlights. Yeah, there is going to be, I mean, that's what Legend Meets Science is about, is that we want to put that out there so that science will maybe eventually, somewhere along the line, take an interest. And I know it's a political football with the current scenario that we've got going with higher education. You know, it's all about money and grant writing. And so it takes people to, you know, that are willing to go out on a limb. And those people are few and far between. But Doug's been able to find enough that I think we can make a dent and really kind of change the perspective.
Yeah, I think with Legend Meets Science 1, Legend Meets Science 2, the book 1, which is 450 pages of science, and the new book that Jeff is going to be forced to write by me, I think through those tools that a number of scientists will actually have the ammunition to get the grants. That's my hope.
You know, between you, Mr. Hychek, and, you know, of course, David and the Olympic Project, and then Dr. Meldrum, you guys have almost been kind of godsent, because nobody wanted to take the, you know, as Dr. Meldrum calls us, citizen scientists, because, you know, we have no credentials, we have no background, we just have this enthusiastic interest in something that's either affected us or that just that we find interesting, but nobody wants to take us serious, but you guys have the credentials and or experience. Your respect, we don't always have such esteemed guests as you two on this show, so you've been able to gather other well-respected scientists to help in this endeavor, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, well, that's certainly appreciated, your comments. I just feel that what I bring to the table is a few past successes. You know, we had a team I put together that filmed the first giant squid. We filmed the first mammal cohabitation ever filmed in history with beavers and muskrats. Filmed the first complete hibernation of a black bear. First birth of wild black bear cubs. First permanent underwater camera system. First use of multi-frequency lighting. First use of IR lighting on TV. You know, I at least feel I've got enough to convince, you know, some people to work with me. And I'm hoping that we can add first person to help facilitate baseline DNA. That'd be a big deal. You know, with working with people like David, who are just, oh my God, David is so, people don't understand how much time he devotes to this topic. David probably, if you would have devoted that much energy to some business or something, God, you'd probably be rich.
Much to my surprise, of course, but you could be right.
No, I just don't think people realize how much time and effort goes into this stuff.
It does. It takes a passion, that's for sure. And yeah. I definitely have had that. But that passion came from your inspiration, believe it or not, back in the early 2000s. You know, with your Legend Meets Science, of course, and then your Monster Quest. You were always using technology and the new plan. And each episode was about, we're going to employ this, we're going to try that. So you've always been interested in trying new things. Now, I would hope we can maybe talk a little bit about your live camera traps that is in beta testing currently. Yep. We've talked about maybe employing Mr. Johnny here to actually utilize this program once it gets online. So
yeah,
I think that
we're excited about spreading this all over the country and, you know, areas that could potentially produce footage of a Bigfoot. And so what we're utilizing is artificial intelligence powered cameras that are much quicker than passive IR sensors, so we can catch more action and yet still not have to go through millions of hours of footage. You know, for instance, I can review all of last night's footage in about, it probably takes me 20 minutes is all, and I can review an entire night's footage.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to have at least 100 cameras out, but we're still field testing. We had everything go down the other day, which, you know, we were about ready to go online, and then we had the cameras all go out. We don't even know why they went out. We had a reboot, but you know, when goes down, we really feel it's going to be bad, and we want to just make sure everything's really rock solid before we start spending tons of money and putting these cameras all over.
Isn't it common to have electrical equipment go down in regards to Sasquatch?
It's happened enough where it gives me pause. I can tell a real quick story. My son took his EMF meter on an expedition. They did a baseline study all the way up to their location, when they're driving through cities, towns. The thing never went past 15, nanohertz. They got to their spot. Of course, it's flatlined at zero, where it should be. There's no electrical interference. They did a wood knock, did another wood knock. Then all of a sudden, the thing pegged, literally pegged, and stayed there all night until the sun came up. Those things are interesting. And I've talked to, I bet you, 10 people at minimum that have said, you know, their batteries all went dead. Lithium batteries went dead. Regular batteries, you know, and recorders went dead occasionally that were fresh. Blaine had his, my son, had his batteries go dead in their tape recorder that night too. So there could be something to it, but so he's gonna go back up. He's going to bring 2 meters, do the same experiment again, and see what happens.
I've had batteries seem to go out when they shouldn't have gone out, but not with a consistency that you could say that there was something affecting them. I've always erred on the side of, well, it's probably just a bad battery.
Right.
So, I mean, even good batteries that are supposed to be brand new and lithium, just FYI, if you test the battery, even if it's just got minimal life, it's going to show full capacity. They show full capacity until they're dead.
Well, yeah, because lithium batteries have a battery management system chip, and that does a cutoff at a certain voltage. So if you start out, for instance, you take a 36-volt lithium battery, lithium ion, it's going to charge full capacity up to 42 volts, and then it's going to have a battery management system, BMS, that's going to cut it off at 30 volts. So it's never going to go below 30 volts. But people have experienced these things going dead,
yeah,
like totally drained, even beyond what the BMS will allow. Well, that shows there's probably some outside force at work. So it is interesting. But like David said, they're inconsistent. These activities are never consistent enough to scientifically test them. And that's the problem. They're consistent but not consistent.
Consistently inconsistent.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's
an interesting thing, but people have been mentioning this along with other, you know, other phenomena like UFOs, filming a UFO. I've had it happen to me to the point of not only having my batteries go dead, but the actual electronics becoming a brick to where they won't even conduct electricity anymore.
And that was with UFO?
That doesn't make any sense. You know, I've actually had techs tell me, you know, on a brand new iPhone that I was filming a whole bunch of orbs in broad daylight in my yard. I was coming in from bass fishing one day, and there were hundreds of these white, I don't know what they were. They weren't birds. They didn't have wings. But they acted like birds. They would act like they were living like in a school of fish. They would all go one direction and they'd be white. They'd go the other direction, they'd be jet black. Then they'd go another direction, they'd all disappear completely, completely invisible. And they were swarming all over my house and my yard and my trees. And not only did my phone go dead, I took it to two techs, and they said, your phone's a brick. But it burned out all of the HDMI ports and all my TVs. Burned out my electric pontoon controller, burned out all of our thermostats, burned out, you know, all the low voltage in our home. I don't know why. You could say, well, that's just a coincidence. Or is it not a coincidence? You know, how do you test something like that? That'll never happen again in my lifetime. Ever.
Wow.
But it happened, and there were other effects. The tree that they were swarming around grew these two tall, 12-foot branches straight up with one little tiny leaf in the fall. How do you grow overnight two 12-foot long bamboo-like branches out of a maple tree, the top of a maple tree, you know, near fall? Like, it was kind of this time of the year. It doesn't make any sense. So was there some electrical disturbance? Yeah, I'd say yeah, absolutely. But can I prove it? No.
You know, I was wondering, how did you find a guy who could create infrasound? How do you find them?
By luck, I guess. I was surfing on YouTube, and you know, you know how they just constantly throw new videos at you. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy that had the world record low voice. He's in the Guinness World Record holder of the lowest voice. Then I found out he's also in the record book for the highest voice. And I thought, I got to talk to this guy, right? And so I just call him up. I get a hold of him. I call him up. And I tell him what I want to do. And I'm thinking he's going to say, go to hell. There's no way he's going to agree to any of this stuff. One, it's on Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. And I told him this invasive procedure, and then he literally said, I said, why are you willing to do all this? And he said, well, I saw one. I said, what? He said, yeah, I saw one. I was with a buddy of mine. I think he said it was fishing on a railroad trestle bridge, and below them was a Bigfoot that was catching fish with its hands, and they watched it for quite a while. And so the chances of all that happening, think about it, are just like a jillion to one.
Right.
Yeah, that's how Doug rolls. It's amazing how he comes across connections. He's the connection maestro. When we first met and started conversing, I'd call you up and you say, "Oh, I'm on the phone with such and such." You know, we'll just say Dr. Meldrum, and I'm, you know, duly impressed. And he says, "Hold on, I'll patch you in." And then the next thing I know, he's getting a phone call from Mr. Sarimento, and he says, "Hold on a moment, I'm going to patch him in." And the next thing you know, I'm on the line with five or six folks all over the map with all sorts of different knowledge. So there's no wonder that Doug has all these interesting ideas because of the people that he connects with.
Well, I have a theory on that, and that's if you're curious enough and you're passionate enough, with that curiosity, the universe will step in and help you. It'll present people to you.
Yes.
I've kind of, you know, and obviously it's just what I call a fun theory, but it seems to kind of play out because there's just so many weird coincidences that happen to me all the time that you just go, there's no way I could have met that guy. There's just no way. It's just weird. I remember I met a guy that, you know, is a real important man in my life right now, you know, because he just, you know, we have a lot in common. Plus, he's had family. His dad had a Bigfoot sighting. And he's a dear friend of mine. And I met him because a bunch of deer flooded onto the trail. We couldn't move. And we were stuck there with our bikes in the dark. And we're just talking. Next thing you know, we're talking about Bigfoot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, stuff like that happens every week, literally.
I'm looking at your resume here, and you used to be a registered private investigator with 100% case success record.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you're an amazing guy, my friend. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of high profile. Of course, started out with things like workers' comp fraud and some of those cases I was solving by the time I hit the bottom of the elevator. In fact, my first case I did, I actually solved it at the bottom of the elevator for my boss. And he's like, "Well, how did you do that?" And he said, "You know, we were working on that case for a month." And I said, "Trade secret." And so then I just went on and really kind of just plowed through cases quick. And one of the secrets I used, Johnny, was to play on people's greed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good at it, apparently, in convincing people to, you know, give up secrets that nobody could get just based on some greed, some big carrot hung in front of them. And that's what I would use in many cases. And then I went on to doing high-profile things, looking for fugitives and that kind of thing. And eventually it started getting kind of dangerous. I got put into the witness protection program here in Minnesota.
Wow.
And then I couldn't get my cars registered anymore. I'd buy a vehicle and there'd be no title. Couldn't find the title.
Wow.
But there's no record of things. Things were disappearing into the black hole. And finally, it was one of the reasons I said, I need to get out of this. It's not good.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, I don't want to hijack the conversation here, but I want to kind of segue into your Hangar One Publishing that you've developed with your sons and family.
Yeah.
I think that there's some things that you need to kind of divulge so that if there's any authors out there in the audience that might want to publish a book, go ahead and explain to them why they might want to use your
sure.
publishing.
Yeah, it just seemed, you know, it all happened pretty organically. There was a really good author. It was just a great writer. But he didn't have any skills in you know, publishing or getting things in all these formats for electronic publishing and Kindle. And we knew how to do all that stuff. So we offered to help. And next thing you know, I'm thinking, well, heck, I'll design a really cool cover for it. And on and on. And next thing you know, we were kind of in the publishing business. And I formally announced to my boys, I said, let's do this. Because this is just an extension of what we all love, you know, it's dealing with mysteries and science and meeting people. And then we started getting ideas on how we could enhance books. For instance, we just came out with the Owl Moon Lab book, which is based on Bigfoot research. And we enhanced it with 42 audio and video recordings in the printed book. And just things like that that we're doing. We're doing augmented covers now, and we're doing hybrid books. We're just starting with this hybrid program to make printed books far more exciting.
Now, you kind of dropped a bombshell here that I think that people need to regurgitate or have the light bulb moment. But can you explain to them how they might be reading through a book and then they come across?
We just simply put a very, really good QR code, and then we have basically our website where we store the footage, and it triggers them right to the Hangar One video, and it just starts playing. They just aim their phone at the QR code, and so you can be reading this book. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they're talking about this thing that happened. Bam! You can look at the video, look at the evidence in a printed book with your phone.
Wow.
And so it's just kind of it's so fast, you know, so it isn't like you have to be a member or sign up for anything or,
right.
You know what I mean? Put your email address in and sign up and then you can, no, it just plays.
So where could we get more information on this?
It's Hangar One Publishing, and there is a submission section.
Okay.
Of course, we've got a lot of new books coming out. We're kind of excited. We're hoping that we can add some pretty cool creativity to books, to science books. I'm hoping I can publish Jeff's new book.
Right. Right.
And could you imagine Jeff's book if it had all sorts of 3D animation in it and audio recordings and videos? And you know, and so from a dry science book, we could really bring it to life.
I want to thank you both for taking the time to be on our show today.
Thank you very much for giving Doug and I a format to blab.
It goes by, it seemed like 2 minutes, Johnny.
More info on David Ellis and the Olympic Project or Doug Hychek and his many projects in the Sasquatch field, log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, alien, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.